Did you get a pair of binoculars or a bird feeder this holiday? Then you're all set to enjoy one of the most interesting and enjoyable hobbies out there, bird watching. And just in time for the annual Audubon Christmas Bird Count. For 115 years, citizen scientists across the country have been bundling up and heading out to survey the skies and the feeders and report back what they've seen, comparing this year's birds with past years. Have flocks of snowy owls made an appearance this year? Have you seen the strange yellow bird that landed in the West Village in New York? Yeah, let us know. And this year, we're going to be playing a game of Name That Bird. Now, you've heard that, I'm sure. You've heard that all over the place. Let me play for you again in case you missed it. Ah, yes, I think I'm outside now, looking up at the sky. That happens when you hear that sound. Can you name it? Can you quickly come up with the name of that bird? So if you think you can name that bird, or if you're an interesting bird watcher and you are on a bird count, are you in your backyard? Are you out there watching for birds? Give us a call. Our number, 844-724-8255, 844-SCI-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Jeff LeBaron, the director of the National Audubon Society's Christmas Bird Count. He joins us from New England Public Radio. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thank you, Ira. It's great to be here, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Ken Kaufman is a naturalist, author of the Kaufman Field Guide to Birds of North America and Kaufman Field Guide to Advanced Birding. He's based out there in Oak Harbor, Ohio. Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here.
Jeff, let's talk with you. This is the last weekend for the bird count. How's it going this year?
So far, I think it's going quite well. We've had 283 counts completed online so far as of this morning. So we've got about 2,200 to go or so. So we're sort of just beginning to get the data in. We have, in fact, seen quite a few snowy owls so far, about 200 tallied so far. Although last year was the record flight of all times in terms of Christmas bird counts, and we had over 1,000 different snowy owls counted last year. It's a whole different scenario this year. There seem to be more of them up around in Ontario and places like that than on the East Coast.
Is there an explanation for that?
It was actually this summer was a slightly different area in the high Canadian Arctic where there was a high nesting density of snowy owls. And it was about 900 miles north of the area where there were a lot of them last year. So I think probably what happened is that the birds just, they don't have to come as far south so that we're not getting quite as many so far down here in the U.S. anyway.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Jeff LeBaron and Ken Kaufman. Ken, you're out in Ohio, and you were on a Christmas bird count last week. Any interesting birds you've been seeing up there?
Well, it's been interesting here. I've gone on a couple of counts, and there's still a couple more to go. We've had lower numbers of individuals for a lot of species, but the number of species isn't down by very much. So that tells us something. We'll know more once all the data are in.
Mm-hmm. And there's been a huge drought, of course, out in California and Texas, Jeff. Has the drought been affecting the birds?
The drought definitely affects the birds, especially in the breeding season. And then what happens is that changes how many birds are where during the Christmas count and wintering season. And I just wanted to say also in terms of what Ken was seeing on his counts, we had the same kind of thing here in New England on the two counts that I've done so far, where actually, ironically, they were very nice and relatively warm days, and that oftentimes makes it harder to find the birds because they don't have to be as concentrated in the areas where birders tend to look for them.
Let's go to the phones, and we have our first guest from Kathy in New Mexico. Hi, Kathy. Got a guess on the bird?
Hi. I do have a guess on the bird. Is it a magpie?
No. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, but it's related to the magpie.
It's related, yes.
It is related to the magpie. Oh, then I have another guess, but I won't.
We actually had Nancy DeWitt tweeted in a guess. She says, I'm supposed to be working, but the annual Sci-Fi Bird Call Quiz and Christmas Bird Count Program is on. She's not working, and she guesses a blue jay. And that's the right answer. I guess we should have given you the turkey sound, Kathy, instead of the winner. Would you have guessed the blue jay second?
No, I wouldn't have. I would have thought it was a crow, another corvid.
Ah, okay, well, happy bird counting and happy New Year to you. Thanks for playing our game. That's a common sound, right?
Well, not in New Mexico, actually.
right.
She had a handicap.
Where the collars. Yeah. Although blue jays have been expanding their range westward, and that's one of the things the Christmas bird count will reveal over a period of years. You can see their numbers increasing in parts of the Pacific Northwest, for example.
Well,
and eventually New Mexico will have them, too.
Yeah, talking about birds being in the wrong place, there was a story this week about a couch's kingbird spotted in New York City in the West Village. I don't think it was out listening to jazz. That's a rare bird for this area, right?
It's a very rare bird. This was actually the first state record for New York State. And actually, that's pretty close to where the Audubon headquarters office is in the West Village there. So who knows? Maybe it was looking for Audubonners. But it's a bird of just barely South Texas and mostly the Gulf Coast of Mexico. There are very few records away from that area. It's quite an amazing sighting.
So what happens to a bird like that? Is it just one bird that's in the wrong area, or if you see one, there are going to be more?
For something like this. Oh, go ahead, Ken.
I was just going to say, in this case, it's probably just one individual. The Tyrannus type kingbirds, they'll wander out of range, but just in very small numbers. So they're only, I believe there are records from Maryland and Massachusetts and Michigan. So this is good to have one in a state that doesn't start with the letter M.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the Audubon's Christmas bird count with my guests, Jeff LeBaron, director of the National Audubon's Christmas bird count, Ken Kaufman, who is a naturalist and author of the Kaufman Field Guide to Birds of North America and the Field Guide to Advanced Birding. Our number, if you're out there watching, looking for the birds in your feeder, maybe they're out there in your feeder, our number 844-724-8255. Is the feeder a good part of stuff you'd like to collect, Jeff?
Absolutely. There are two ways that people can get involved with the Christmas bird count. One, of course, is going out into the field and counting the birds that you see over the course of your route that you take. But certainly people who either can't or don't want to go out in the field, as long as they live within a count circle, can count the birds at their feeder, and then what they do is they also, as do the field observers, they submit their data to the compilers or the organizers of the counts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an important aspect and definitely an important component of what we're learning.
All right, let's go to the phones, 844-724-8255. Let's stick right here in New York. Michael in Manhattan, welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I have a question about a bird I observed. I'm not a birder, so I don't know this stuff at all. But I was about 4 months ago, I was bicycling in Manhattan, not far from Grand Central Station, and I saw on the ground a bird that looked to me like a kiwi, you know, straight out of the shoe polish canister. It was puffy. It had a long beak, short legs. What could it possibly have been? I mean, obviously, it wasn't a kiwi, I don't think.
No, it certainly wasn't a kiwi unless it escaped from a zoo, but probably it was either a woodcock or a snipe. Both of those are migratory sandpipery kinds of things, but they're field birds, and sometimes they get disoriented in the cities, and if it had clunked a building or was just wandering around on the streets, I'll bet you that's what it was.
Michael, do you do any bird watching? You say you're not a bird watcher.
I'm not, no.
Will this inspire
you? I
see
plenty of pigeons and starlings, but that's about it.
You know, I was never a bird watcher. I live in the New York area. I was never a bird watcher here until I went to Florida, and then I went to the Everglades, and that just turned me on when I saw all those birds. And being a New Yorker, I set up a bird feeder, and I thought there were just pigeons and sparrows around here. There are a tremendous number of colorful birds around the New York area. That are very surprising. So
I have to tell you, on one of my travels, I saw for the first time a hummingbird, and they're just magical how they can literally hover without moving.
That's my holy grail of never seen birds in my backyard so far, and every year trying to attract them. So you saw one and you weren't even looking for it.
Yeah, but I wasn't in New York. I was out west somewhere.
That's great. Happy holiday. Thanks for calling us.
Same to you, sir.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can see in the streets of New York here if you look around.
Or in Central Park. There's an incredible diversity. It's just, I mean, the birds in Central Park can be absolutely incredible.
I heard, Ken, that you spotted a tundra swan. Where's that bird coming in from? What is a tundra swan?
Well, tundra swans, they nest on the tundra just by coincidence, and they winter in more temperate climates. And where I live in northern Ohio, it's always been a really common migrant. They pass through in fall, mostly heading down to Chesapeake Bay and down to the coast of the Carolinas. But over the last couple of decades, we've had more and more that stayed through the winter. Mm. And recently, we've had up to thousands of them staying up here near Lake Erie. And in a way, it's reflecting a change in climate. As the winters gradually become more mild, these flocks of tundra swans can stay farther north.
Let me go to the phones before we go bring in another guest. Jenny in Elkhart, Indiana. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Fine, thank you. I have a question regarding wild turkeys.
Not the kind you drink. No.
Not that kind, no.
Okay.
I had a flock of about 50 wild turkeys in my backyard. I live near a water, and they were flying from one side of the creek to the other. And I've lived in this house for about 13 years and have seen many wild turkeys over the years, but never until today have I seen an albino turkey.
Wow. An albino.
And I was wondering how common those might be.
It was all pure white, the turkey? All the feathers were white?
The majority of the feathers were white. There was some dark spurs in, but it was clearly an albino white turkey.
Jeffrey,
and it was a hen. It wasn't a male.
All right, let's get some expert opinion on this. Jeff,
well,
Ken?
I haven't heard of an albino wild turkey before, but it certainly, with the numbers increasing that there are, it's not out of the realm of possibility. But, of course, domesticated turkeys come from wild turkeys, and they're all white. So somewhere in there, there is sort of the ability for them to get white. But I bet you this is, you know, Ken, maybe you know a little better, but, you know, I have never seen a wild albino or partial albino turkey. And we get plenty of them here in New England now.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen a white one in the wild, but occasionally you've got some interbreeding between escaped captive birds and the wild population. And so you could have the offspring of a pairing like that would be white.
Being a New Englander, there certainly are a lot of wild turkeys out there now. I'd like to bring in another guest who's on the bird count trail right now, John Yerger, Assistant Director of Borderland Tours. He joins us from Atascosa Highlands Bird Count in Arizona. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So what are you seeing out there? Can you describe the area where you're counting birds right now?
Yeah, well, what's really interesting about the Atascosa Highlands is, you know, a lot of these Christmas bird counts are kind of located near population centers, and we're out here in essentially the wilderness. I mean, 95% of the circle is on public land, so it's kind of a neat area. It's a bit higher than the surrounding desert here in southern Arizona, so we're at about 4,000 feet in some really nice rolling grasslands and an oak chaparral kind of habitat. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, you know, 52 species so far today, so I think we're doing pretty well.
In one day?
In one day, in one morning, yeah. We're not even having lunch yet.
Well, anything unusual?
We haven't had anything unusual yet. You know, we're still hoping for that before it gets dark here. But, you know, we're just really pleased to see the diversity we've seen on this count.
Do you get lots of birds coming from Mexico, other than parts of the country that, you know, that might get a chance to see?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something we have seen today. We've seen a few what's called a rufous-winged sparrow. So a few rufous-winged sparrows, and their range is really pretty restricted. They just barely get in the United States from Mexico. So that's one we were pretty excited to see.
Yeah, Ken, you spent some time in Arizona. What interesting birds are out there this time of the year?
I've been on the Atascosa Highlands count in the past. It's a great count circle, as John was saying. Just lots of opportunity for hiking. One thing that it's interesting to me, we used to see just very few elegant trogon and hepatic tanager, two of the birds that were really hard to find on the count back in the 80s. But I guess recently you've been getting them more often.
Hmm. Interesting. Lots of people are calling in with their birds. Let me get a few more calls in. Tom in Mayville, New York. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey there.
I guess I was just calling, kind of in line with the turkey comment earlier. I'm a turkey hunter myself, and most of the time I spend just looking at birds because I'm not so successful all the time. And last year I was fortunate enough to see three pileated, I think that's how you pronounce it, woodpecker in the same tree.
Wow, that's a giant. Those are giant woodpeckers, aren't they? Wow.
And then some rose-breasted grosbeak, and I also saw one snowy owl last winter. I've yet to see one this year. But along with some bobolinks, just some other birds that I've seen in the area, and I just thought I'd call in and comment about that.
Well, thanks for calling, and good luck. Good luck seeing the snowy owls. Our number 844-724-8255. John, before I let you go, have you noticed any effects of the drought out there in your neck of the woods?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Yeah, it seems to me, and this is just my impression, I don't know how accurate it is, but sparrow numbers seem to be down quite a bit. And, of course, you know, sparrows here in the winter in Arizona feed on quite a bit of seeds. And so as seed production goes down, certainly, you know, sparrow numbers seem to go down with it. So that's one thing. But, you know, we've had some pretty decent rains this year. And hopefully if that trend continues, you know, maybe we'll see some elevated numbers in subsequent seasons.
All right. Good luck to you and happy bird counting.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Our number 844-724-8255. Let's continue on the phones because we've got lots of people. Birds are very popular, especially with Carol in Penn Valley, California. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Ira. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Our bird count circle is in Northern California, the Sierra foothills. So we're between the mountains and the Central Valley.
And what are you looking for? Anything in particular?
Well, last year, some of the birds of note that we had were both eagles, the golden eagle and bald eagle, and a sparrow's golden eye. And you were talking about sparrows, and we white-throated sparrows used to be really more rare in our area, and we had them on the count last year, and I have one at my feeder right now this morning.
Wow. Wow, that's great. Thanks for calling. Good luck to you.
Thank you. And I'd like to just say hi to Ken. I met him at the Winter Wings Festival up in Klamath when he was up there a couple of years ago with his wife, Kimberly, and really appreciate the work they're doing with young people. And I wonder if they're having young people participate in their bird count.
Yeah, thanks, Carol.
Well, thanks very much. Yeah, actually, the Fremont Christmas Bird Count here in Ohio last weekend was co-sponsored by the Ohio Young Birders Club.
Huh. Ken, I know that you have spotted bald eagles in the past. Have you seen any their numbers growing this year?
Yeah, that's been one of the really inspiring things about Christmas bird counts here in northern Ohio. The number of bald eagles just keeps going up. Every year, that bird was practically gone from Ohio back in the 1970s. But they've had really a great comeback. And the Christmas count really, really tracks that.
Any reason for that?
Well, there's been a lot of serious effort. The Ohio Department of Wildlife, their Division of Wildlife, really worked hard on protecting the nesting pairs and monitoring them and so they've made a good comeback after the outlawing of DDT.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, talking about the Christmas bird count. Let's go to Meriden, Connecticut with Peter. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Just wanted to say I listened to the show, whatever you're talking about, but you happen to hit my subject today. I am a Northeast birder. I have been feeding the birds for about 13 years. Make my own suet, make my own bird seed most of the time. However, I got a 40-pound bag of bird seed as a Christmas present from my son, so I appreciated that. In response to the caller that from New York that saw what looked like might have been a kiwi, I had a pair of bobwhites came to the feeder. They rummaged around for a little bit, but they were not interested in the food I put out. They actually went under my holly bush and did their mating ritual. I captured it on film. I was very fortunate to do that. And as far as the woman who called about the hummingbirds, please don't be discouraged. It took me 2 years of putting the hummingbird feeders out in early April when the weather warmed to around 60 degrees, and then cleaning them once a week religiously, putting I have an ant moat on top of my hummingbird feeder, and it took 2 years. But finally, this year, I had numerous ruby-throated hummingbirds come to the feeder, and I was actually fortunate enough to while I was out in the yard tending my garden, the hummingbirds really paid me no mind. They were less than a foot away from me.
Wow.
So to the woman with the hummingbirds, don't give up. It takes time, and once they find the feeder, I believe that they will come back. I'd like to just ask Jeffrey Barron if that is true.
Yes, it certainly is. And I was going to mention that it can take a while for them to find the feeders, but once they know they're there, hummingbirds are very, very adept at learning all the different feeding sources in their territories. Once they learn those feeders are there, they'll be out there practically, oftentimes before you get the feeders up the next spring, and they're young, and their young's young will come back every year. And Audubon has a new project called Hummingbirds at Home, and one of the things that we're tracking is how the hummingbirds are doing in people's yards, and also what are the flowers that the hummingbirds are most wanting to use over the course of the season in their yards.
Yeah. Peter, did you have to plant flowers, special flowers, to attract them? Or were you okay with that? Peter, are you there?
Special silk flowers on the on my deck. And I was out eating dinner one night, and right next to my ear came a hummingbird and tried to suck nectar from the silk flower. And as soon as I saw that, I said, that's it. I'm getting a feeder, and I did. And I put out three different types of feeders, and they seem to prefer the feeders that have the perches. And you don't have to use the red nectar mix. I use a 4-to-1 mix of sugar to water, and you have to keep them clean. And I made my own ant moat, which is just basically a 1-liter soda bottle cut near the end, glued to the wire that I have the feeder hanging from. And once it fills with water, it keeps the ants away. And I've been just really blessed to see these little birds and watch them, and at times have gotten within a foot of them and just holding still, and they don't seem to mind.
Well, you've given me new hope for my feeder in Connecticut also.
I'd want to add that it's actually quite important, as the caller said, to not use the red food dye. Because hummingbirds don't need it, and we're not really sure how it affects them. And most of the feeders have red on them anyway, and as he's learned, they'll come to artificial red things, even just stuff. So they're very attracted to bright colors, but it's better not to have that dye in their food.
Well, that's a good place to start, because if you need I realize now that hummingbirds are part of your bird count and that you're making a special bird count for them. And
The hummingbirds in the south, down in Arizona, are there year-round and along the Gulf Coast, but we don't have them up here in the winter.
All right. Well,
normally.
Well, that's terrific, because I'm interested in them. I'm going to do some more research on your bird count for the hummingbird count. Jeff LeBaron, director of the National Audubon Society's Christmas Bird Count. Ken Kaufman, naturalist and author of the Kaufman Field Guides. You have your birds of North America and a field guide to advanced birding. Gentlemen, have a happy new year. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks very much, Ira.
Thanks very much.
Good luck on the bird count.